Hello and welcome to another episode of DE Classified, a podcast dedicated to researching and examining the pivotal role played by destroyer escorts. My name is Tyler J. Warman, an intern aboard USS Slater, and this month we are looking at the history of USS Bronstein. Ben Richard Bronstein was born April 14, 1915 in Manchester, New Hampshire, to Russian Jewish immigrants Max and Dina Bronstein. Dr. Bronstein graduated from the University of New Hampshire, then proceeded to graduate from Tufts Medical School in 1940. Dr. Bronstein was appointed Assistant Surgeon Medical Corps with the rank of Lieutenant Junior Grade on 4th October 1941. He served aboard USS Jacob Jones, DD-130. Jacob Jones was the 6th Wicks-class flush deck when she was launched at New York Shipbuilding in Camden, New Jersey. This was the same shipyard that completed the first Jacob Jones, which had the unfortunate distinction of being the only U.S. naval destroyer lost in the First World War. Jacob Jones was laid down 21st February 1918 and commissioned on the 20th of October 1919. She operated briefly in the Atlantic and joined the Pacific Fleet in January of 1920. She would patrol along the West Coast until June of 1922 when she was decommissioned. In May of 1930, Jacob Jones was one of 60 mothballed four-stackers returned to service to replace vessels recently discovered to be obsolete. Now, it is worth a brief dive into the specifics of a Wicks-class destroyer, which were produced by the U.S. Navy from 1917 to 1919. Together with the preceding Caldwell class and the subsequent Clemson class, they were known as the flush deck destroyers. These destroyers were built with the need for high speed, economical cruising, performance in heavy seas, high fuel capacity, and reduction-geared steam turbines. Due to increased tensions with Germany, President Woodrow Wilson passed the Naval Appropriation Act of 1916, also known as the Big Navy Act, with the intentions of enhancing the United States Navy into a force capable of protecting both coasts. This act decreed the creation of 6 Lexington-class battle cruisers, 10 Omaha-class scout cruisers, and 50 Wicks-class destroyers. However, under the direction of the United States Naval General Board, to combat the submarine threat, there were 267 Wicks and Clemson-class destroyers completed. The Wicks class found that her tapered stern was ideal for depth charge deployment. Unfortunately, she was found to be of short range. Should be noted that underwave replenishment was created during the Second World War. She also had a large turn radius, making her less effective against submerged threats. Jacob Jones herself was armed with 4 4-inch 50 caliber guns, 2 3-inch 23 caliber guns, and 12 21-inch torpedo tubes. It was on the 27th of February, 1942, that the USS Jacob Jones recognized the burning wreckage of the torpedoed oil tanker R.P. Resser off of the Delaware Capes. The Wicks-class destroyer, which dated back to 1919, sailed to perform the search and rescue. The four-stacker circled the wreck for 2 hours to no avail. Shortly after, she would continue her southward course. On the dawn of February 28, 1942, the undetected Type 7C submarine U-578 was participating in Operation Paukenschlag, or Operation Drumbeat. The purpose of Drumbeat was simple. Kriegsmarine wanted to see how close their submarine Wolf Packs could sail to the eastern seaboard of the United States. At first light, U-578 fired a spread of torpedoes into the port side of the pre-war destroyer. Dr. Ben Richard Bronstein was lost with the ship. He was 26. His body was never recovered. This was the first ship named in his honor. USS Bronstein, DE-189, was a Cannon-class destroyer escort. She was laid down on the 26th of August, 1943 at the Federal Shipbuilding and Dry Dock Company in Port Newark, New Jersey. She was launched and christened 14th November, 1943, sponsored by Mrs. Dina Bronstein Kurz, mother of Dr. Bronstein. The vessel was commissioned 13th December 1943 with Lieutenant Sheldon Hoard Kinney in command. Following shakedown training performed off Bermuda January 1944, Bronstein sailed for Norfolk, Virginia, joining her assigned task group 21.16, a hunter-killer group composed around the Bogue-class USS Block Island. Bronstein was joined by fellow tin cans USS Corey, USS Thomas, USS Bostwick, and USS Bremen. Task Group 21.16 departed Norfolk for anti-submarine duty on the 16th of February, 1944. At first, the task group was tasked with conducting a vain search for a Japanese submarine reported between Bermuda and the Azores, but they would soon turn their attention to a wolf pack with about 8 or 9 submarines. USS Thomas was the first to establish surface radar contact, then Bostwick joined in the search to accurately identify this contact. Meanwhile, detached by USS Block Island, Bronstein sailed to search for a second reported contact. Upon firing a star shell, the illumination revealed U-709 on the surface preparing to attack Thomas and Bostwick. Initially, Bronstein's radar operator reported, "It can't be a submarine. Its pip is larger than a DE," meaning that they were approaching a submarine high out of the water. Once again, star shells were loaded into the Bronstein's 3-inch gun to further silhouette the enemies. According to Lieutenant Sheldon Kinney, quote, "We fired an illuminating spread and saw the sub preparing to make attacks on Thomas and Bostwick, who were well within range. How our gunner officer, Lieutenant Richard Rowe, ever did it, I'll never know. At over 3,000 yards, he smacked the conning tower of U-441 on the first salvo from our 3-inch gun." Once spotted, the Bronstein opened fire with her 3-inch batteries, 20mm, and twin 40mm, forcing the U-boat to submerge after registering several hits. The DEs joined together and launched multiple patterns of depth charges. U-709 was finally sunk the following morning by USS Thomas. Shortly thereafter, Block Island signaled to Bronstein to return to assigned station. However, Bronstein's sonarmen picked up another contact approximately 1,900 yards from the carrier. The U-boat was situated almost directly underneath Bronstein, the escort carrier, in her sights. When Lieutenant Kinney ordered depth charges dropped, Bronstein laid a pattern of 18 depth charges. One of these explosions must have detonated a torpedo fired from the U-boat as Bronstein's electrical system was knocked out, halting the diesel-electric engines. The floundering DE was never attacked while she was dead in the water. Lieutenant Kinney claims, quote, "It was a fatal error on the part of the skipper of U-603 because as soon as we were underway again, we made contact and sank him." German war records confirm this kill. After this eventful 3-week journey, the hunter-killer group 21.16 put into Casablanca on March 8th for repair and refueling. Their next assignment was to sail to the Cape Verde Islands, where there was reports of submarine activity. The task group would depart the Moroccan coast on March 11th. 5 days later, aircraft from Block Island spotted and attacked a U-boat which hastily submerged, following up by several faint contacts. The Gleaves-class destroyer, USS Corey, was dispatched to the target area 23 miles away and would search until sunrise. The action report from Bronstein states, quote, "Frequent countermarches were necessary in order to recover or launch aircrafts, and little progress was made in the direction of the contact. Flying operations were conducted throughout the night. It was later learned that the aircraft had killed 2 men on the U-boat and put her periscope out of commission. By the time the Corey reached her position, she had again submerged." Bronstein was then ordered to assist Corey in her search, and the two vessels joined by a space of 2,500 yards off Corey's port beam. They conducted what is known as a box search, sailing in a square route from the center location, trying to locate a submerged threat. Next, an aircraft spotted oil slicks, which the pilot soon marked by flares, requesting the tin cans investigate. Bronstein would eventually establish sonar contact and quickly close the gap. The nature of the echo established that this was in fact a submarine. Bronstein would fire a full hedgehog pattern, once again losing contact with the submerged threat. Next, faint propeller noises were heard by the Bronstein's hydrophone, regaining contact on her starboard quarter. Bronstein, circling slowly overhead, dropped a pattern of 18 depth charges. The blast from the depth charges racked the submarine's crews to their knees. Oil became visible on the water's surface. Unfortunately, depth charges create vicious turbulence underneath the water, distorting the ability of the sonar crew to establish a hit. This is called the depth charge disturbance area, which could allow a submerged enemy to slip away. Therefore, no further depth charges were dropped. At 11:31, Corey advanced to continue her search, gaining sound contact while Bronstein circled the area. Corey unleashed two more unsuccessful depth charge attacks and subsequently lost contact once again. In the eloquent words of Lewis M. Andrews Jr., quote, "This went on for one anxious hour, but patience and perseverance together were the name of the game in anti-submarine warfare," end quote. At 13:15, with battle stations manned for over 3 hours, Corey dropped a full pattern of depth charges with Bronstein off her starboard quarter. 3 minutes later, 13:18, the German U-boat broke through the water, revealing her sleek steel bow, and the Bronstein opened fire with all available guns, scoring hits with her main 3-inch battery, continuing to fire salvos at the gun captain's will. According to Captain Kinney, both vessels were, quote, "consistently on target," end quote, surrounding the conning tower in a plume of smoke. The Oerlikons rattled, the Bofors bellowed as the U-boat floundered dead in the water, the conning tower slowly slipping into the sea. These were the final throes of U-801. 37 prisoners were taken aboard Bronstein. One, who appeared to be the captain, produced the bent wheel of a coating machine, which was then transferred to Block Island. Interestingly, this would upgrade the after-action reports of all three ships to be classified as top secret instead of confidential. The prisoners were then transferred to Corey and then to Block Island, with Bronstein rejoining the Jeep carrier in her ASW cruise. For actions, on the 29th of February, 1st of March, 16th, 17th, March 1944, Lieutenant Sheldon Kinney received the Navy Cross, and the Bronstein was awarded the Presidential Unit Citation for what the Navy later called, quote, "the most concentrated and successful anti-submarine action by a U.S. Navy ship during World War II. Lieutenant Sheldon Kinney would later serve on USS Ludlow and USS Taylor in the Korean War, and would be the first skipper in charge of a guided missile frigate, USS Mitscher. During the Vietnam War, Kinney commanded the USS Mississinewa, and then the naval gunfire support ships in Operation Sea Dragon in Vietnam. He would serve as the Commandant of Midshipmen of the U.S. Naval Academy from 1963 to 1967. He retired from the Navy in 1972 after 38 years of service and became president of SUNY Maritime College. He would permanently retire in 1982. Bronstein served as valiantly as any destroyer escort ever had. Her decorations speak for themselves, as well as her 3 credited sinkings of U-709 along with DE's Thomas and Bostwick, and later the same day, U-603. Later on 17th March, together with USS Corey, she sunk U-801. Bronstein would receive 4 battle stars. These decorations and accomplishments, the Tin Can Sailor would say, were just a part of the job. Part of a rigorous life at sea that bonded these boys together through the harrowing swells of the North Atlantic, a bond that would last a lifetime through recollected sea stories and shared experiences. But Cannon-class sisters Bronstein and Bremen had a story all their own to tell, and, well, this is not your typical sea story. On the dawn of the war, the Polish National Bank, Bank Polski, had gold resources with an approximate value of 463 million zlotys, approximately 87 million 1939 U.S. dollars, with a weight of 79.5 metric tons. These stores were in the Bank Polski vaults in Warsaw, and in different branches around the country, as well as abroad. The German invasion of Poland on September 1, 1939, forced the Polish government to evacuate their gold stores while Panzer forces were massing outside of Warsaw. The Nazis knew the gold's location, and Hitler wanted the gold in exchange for natural resources for their quickly expanding Lebensraum. Polish finance minister, Ignaz Matuszewski, and director of the bank, Zygmunt Karpinski, joined the flow of refugees leaving Warsaw. On the evening of September 13th, the gold was secretly brought to a pre-arranged assembly point located at a railway station in Snietin, near the border of Romania. Children and women sat atop the gold stores as to not arouse suspicion. Unfortunately, a squadron of Luftwaffe fighters attacked, killing several men and losing a small amount of gold bullion to aerial bombs. From there, the gold was transported to the port of Constantia in the Black Sea. However, the Romanian situation was exceedingly complex due to their declaration of formal neutrality by the Crown Council 6th of September 1939. This agreement with Germany would seal the Romanian borders on the 15th of September. The tanker, Eocene, transporting Bank Polski's gold, had been ordered seized by the Romanian government under German direction. However, she had already left Romanian waters, just out of their reach. On the same day, with the help from the British consul, Anthony Kendall, the gold departed for Turkey, arriving in Istanbul on the 20th of September. Then loaded into freight wagons to be transported to Syria and then on to Lebanon, arriving in French-controlled Beirut on the eve of the 23rd September. The Parisian authorities agreed to accept the gold and would store the precious metal in a branch of the Banque de France. The Poles chose the Nevers branch in central France. French cruisers loaded and shipped the cargo to the south of France, the first batch leaving 23rd September, the last left for France on the 2nd of October. The cargo would arrive in the port of Toulon, and later Nevers. On 29th September and 7th October respectively, it would be deposited into the Banque de France's branch under supervision of employees of Bank Polski. However, security of the gold could not be guaranteed by the spring of 1940. The rapid German onslaught would seize Belgium, Netherlands, and France in rapid succession. Henceforth, on the 30th of May 1940, Minister of Treasury Henryk Strasburger began demanding that Polish gold be transported to the United States. However, the day after the French surrender, the gold escaped Lorient, her escorting ships both hitting mines, but the vessel holding the gold luckily steered clear. Fascinatingly, on the first day at sea, the captain of the French vessel received three successive dispatches demanding the ship return to Lorient. Though the coding of the messages was correct, the language phrasing was more German than French, so the ship proceeded to Casablanca. But Casablanca was not the destination. From there, the gold proceeded to Dakar in French-controlled Africa, and then a dark jungle hiding place deep in French Sahara. All this information about the transportation of Polish gold was kept confidential throughout the war, meaning that Block Island and her five escort ships operating off the Cape Verde Islands were in the dark when on February 20, 1944, orders were received to detach DEs Bronstein and Bremen and send them to Dakar with an unknown assignment. Since the Germans knew the approximate location of the gold, dispatching small sub-hunters would be ideal to not attract the attention. On the 25th of March, orders from Vice Admiral William A. Glassford were received by Lieutenant Commander E.N.W. Hunter of Bremen, and then given to Lieutenant Sheldon Kinney of Bronstein. The destroyer escorts were ordered with loading a cargo of gold from Mr. Stepan Michalski, director of Bank Polski, and then to proceed to Manhattan without delay. When the two DEs reached Dakar, the gold had been brought to the harbor from the interior and secured in a French fort. When everyone had cleared out of the French naval base except for assigned personnel, French army trucks began unloading the gold from the guarded fort. The trucks were under guard by a Senegalese sentry with fixed bayonets. On board the destroyer escorts, space was being created in the mostly empty depth charge magazines, which had been expended sub-hunting the month prior. The weight needed to be accounted for in terms of ballast of the vessel, so many munitions had to be moved or unloaded. The trucks were continually unloaded in iron-bound boxes sealed with the letters BP, carrying the gold ingots tightly packed in sawdust were numbered and checked as they were loaded onto the ships. According to first-class sonarman Clinton L. Gant Sr., the Senegalese sailors were of a much stronger build than the U.S. sailors, who instead of lifting the boxes needed to rely on a block-and-tackle method to load the cargo. Sonerman First Class Gant recalls old Western movies portraying stagecoach robbers throwing crates of gold. Quote, "Let me assure you that the weight of the gold negates this comedy. You can forget about the action in the movies." End quote. The gold was placed under lock and key, and an officer was assigned to guard the entry to the magazine. The security was upkept through the entire 18-knot voyage. On the third day of the journey to New York, Bronstein gained contact with a possible submarine. A depth charge pattern was deployed, and speed was increased to full, and they sailed ahead, sending reports of the contact to a hunter-killer group. Bronstein could not risk a torpedo with the contents of her voyage. When the ship arrived in the Brooklyn Naval Yard, the crews were ordered to strict shipboard isolation. To supervise the offloading, there were units of Marines, FBI, NYPD, and Naval Intelligence. Sonerman Gant recalled the scene to Lewis M. Andrews Jr. Quote, "Only the captain was allowed off the ship. Next morning, an army of Brinks trucks and yard security appeared. Cranes unloaded the cargo." End quote. Armored trucks from the Federal Reserve drove $65 million worth of gold to the New York branch vaults under Liberty Street in Lower Manhattan that day in April 1944. Recollecting in 1956 for Rear Admiral Samuel Elliott Morrison, Lieutenant Sheldon H. Kinney recalls, quote, "That was the closest I'll ever become to being a multimillionaire." End quote. The end of Bronstein's war service saw her guiding Mediterranean-bound convoys across the Atlantic and participating in a hunter-killer group formed around USS Card. This hunter-killer task force, designated Task Group 21.10, was in pursuit of a U-boat reported to be operating in the vicinity of Newfoundland. Eventually, DEs Baker and Thomas would sink U-233 on 5th of July, 1944. From there, the task group set course for Boston to repair the damage to Thomas in ramming the sub and to land the prisoners. The task group would leave Boston to patrol the West Indies on 10th July. The Bronstein would search for more submarines and be used as a screening vessel and pilot qualification flights, but in the end of 1944, she entered the Boston Navy Yard to repair one of her main engines. She would participate in Navy Day in 1944 and then proceed from New York City to Green Cove Springs, Florida. Bronstein was decommissioned on the 17th of June, 1946. But on May 3, 1952, she was transferred to Uruguay and recommissioned ROU Artigas. She would be scrapped in 1988. After the Second World War, the U.S. Navy began experimentation in a newer generation of vessels designed for anti-submarine warfare. Originally laid down as ocean escorts, the Bronstein-class frigates would be redesignated in the June 30, 1975 ship reclassification, changing the hull designation from DE to FF, meaning fast frigate. This class compromised the second generation of DEs post-World War II, complete with a new hull design, larger, low-frequency active and passive sonar known as ANSQS-26AX sonar system. This entirely new design incorporated improvements found in the Fleet Rehabilitation and Modernization, FRAM, program, which was specifically designed to extend the life of vessels used in the Second World War. Unfortunately, the weight of the new anti-submarine warfare equipment made the Bronstein class too slow to operate with the ASW task forces for which they were designed. There were only two ships of the Bronstein class built, USS Bronstein, Fast Frigate 1037, and the USS McCloy, Fast Frigate 1038. McCloy would make her name late in the 1980s, setting the record for biggest military drug bust, capturing 49.5 tons of marijuana. After U.S. service, both vessels would be sold to the Mexican Navy.
Thank you for listening to DE Classified. This podcast is brought to you by the Destroyer Escort Historical Museum aboard USS Slater. You can find a transcript of this episode, accompanying photos, and a bibliography at ussslater.org/declassified. I'm Shanna Schuster, and I hope you join us next month when we declassify another destroyer escort.